what moves me is recognizing how money is way more than math and how it influences our behavior, our brain, and the way we treat other people and the way we live our lives.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
As we get closer to retirement, we may all wish that we had put some more money aside. Today's guest is going to suggest that no matter how much financial investing education we have received, our bottom line may depend on our behavior and, in particular, how much we've been spending. Daryl Lyons is an author, a personal finance expert, and an ambitious entrepreneur. Daryl Lyons knows what it means to run a business and to live in the middle class. Now he's ready to help us achieve the dream of financial freedom so we can enjoy life. Daryl's San Antonio, Texas company, Pax Financial Group, is in the Inc. 5000 fastest growing company and best place to work. His work and his passion have allowed Daryl to give back to his community. Daryl's latest mission is to help redefine retirement, where we no longer think of retiring, but rather pivot into the next chapter of life with purpose. This idea is rooted in thousands of one-on-one conversations with people about money and a relatively new study called Behavioral Science. Let's welcome Daryl Lyons to the show today. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you very much.
So can you tell us where you are exactly in the world?
Yes, I'm in the state of Texas, specifically San Antonio, Texas, which just sits in the southern part of Texas, not too far from Mexico.
Right. Now, you work in the financial space, so could you explain your background, please?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in a little small town called Castroville, Texas. It's near San Antonio. We lived in a little single-wide trailer there, and I just became absolutely curious about money, how people had money. I had no clue how people got money, made money. I mean, it just became fascinating to me at age 17. I couldn't stop learning about money. And so everything I did was studying money all the way through college. And then I ended up getting a job in financial services. So today I own and operate a company that provides financial advice to thousands of people across the country.
Wow. Well, very impressive. Well done, you. And it's curious to hear people's background and where they've ended up. So that definitely helped you.
Yeah, it did. You know, I just have I certainly have an appreciation and a curiosity. It's amazing how money, you know, we think of it's math, but it's so much more than math. It's really behavior. For example, let's say somebody has $5 million, and I use dollars because, you know, in terms of my American point of reference, you'll have to forgive, but $5 million, regardless where it's at, right? And then that's person A. Person B had $9 million yesterday, but has $5 million today. The question is, who is happier? Person A or person B? They both have $5 million, right?
Yes.
But the person B had $9 million yesterday. And so what we know is this thing about money is more than just math, because math would tell you, an economist would tell you, they're both equally happy. They both have $5 million. But the person who just lost money and had $9 million and now has $5 million is not as happy. And my point to that little anecdotal conversation is that what moves me is recognizing how money is way more than math and how it influences our behavior, our brain, and the way we treat other people and the way we live our lives.
That's very insightful. So I gather you've been a certified financial planner, but you're also a behavioral financial advisor. So this is what you're talking about.
That's correct. It's trying to understand some of the indirect consequences of money. For example, in that one situation where somebody had $9 million and now they have $5 million, you'll actually see the prefrontal cortex of their brain not have as much blood flow, and because they're anxious and worried. And as a result, some of the decision-making that comes after that is very poor because they're just not able to think. They've got something called amygdala hijack, where they can no longer think like they used to, and they're using their fight or flight response. And then we ask ourselves, okay, that's frustrating, but how does that impact the marriage? We see such a graying of divorce in our country, and much of it's rooted in money issues. Or how does that impact that person treats their kids? And so what we realize in behavioral finance is that behavior is much more important than we ever thought. You know, we do so much money analytics, and it's very important. But here's the reality. When it comes to people building their net worth and investment performance, 13% is related to selecting the right investments, asset allocation, and even market timing. The other 87% is a direct result of people's decisions and their behavior. So the majority of our time that we spend studying money needs to consider how our behavior intersects with our money. And so that's where I've been spending a lot of time digging in and helping provide leadership.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I've heard before that we should be having a plan and to know why we need to have money and save money for retirement. So these money challenges, I suppose I'm more interested in as we age at the moment, but I see you've also focused on the middle class. What are the challenges are we facing going forward?
Yeah, the middle class is one that we really need to really keen in on, this behavioral finance idea, or really it's an academic study now since about 1979. It's really gained a lot of momentum, and there's amazing leadership in this space. It's really a growing trend. But really the behavior is really needs to be focused on the middle class. And I say that because not an indictment for those that are wealthy, and certainly not an indictment for those that don't have money that might be considered lower class. But the behavioral issues that we're dealing with in the middle class are very real. And I think it requires a deal of focus. In the United States in 1975, our savings rate as a country was 17%. And today it's 3.5%. Now the problem is we don't have less information. We have an exponential amount of more information than we did in 1975. So if information is not going to solve the problem, what is? And so what happens with the middle class is we really are up against a wall. These mischievous marketing companies, they're just brilliant now. Today, they'll put in the smell of apple pies in an appliance store and their sales go up 23%. Some of them will give you chocolate before you walk into a luxury goods store and you'll buy. At Amazon, you can buy on Amazon or any .com retailer and you can have one-click pays. You just swipe. There's even optical reading. So we have all these marketers that are very mischievous that know the psychology of buying, and then Christmas comes and it's the Super Bowl of buying, and we're not prepared as middle class, and we just, without thinking, we swipe and we spend, and there's no friction, there's no pause to buying, and then the middle class wakes up a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, and there's no money to save, there's no money to give, and there's no money to pay down debt, and we wonder why we're broke. And it's because we are fighting a real battle here with spending. And it's when things are good, we look out the window. But when things are bad, it's time for the middle class to look in the mirror and say, what are we doing wrong?
Well, that's really extremely interesting. The psychology of selling is obviously working. So what are we going to do about it?
Well, it's brilliant. And I'm fascinated by the psychology of selling. I think they're, you know, you can't say it's, you know, we don't like these people, these retailers. They're doing what they have to do to earn a living. And every one of them are passionate typically passionate about the products and services they offer. Many of the listeners are working at those companies and they have a job to do. But in the middle class, we just have to be a little bit sharper. Again, information isn't moving the needle with us. What it means to be financially intelligent is different than being financially competent. Financial intelligence means that we know what to do. Financial competence means that in the face of competing emotions, we lean into what is rational. And so we make a decision based on what is in the best interest of ourselves now and our future selves and our family. And so that requires some discipline and some, I would say, stiff arming purchases that we might normally make. But we have to really be aware of that. We have to add what I would consider, I call this the pause in all our purchases.
I suppose it also means we have to have an overarching plan of where we hope to end up.
Yeah, plan is so important. And I'm glad you bring that up because having a plan, we've done research and identified that people who have a plan have more confidence with their money. And when we're dealing with several emotions, one of them we don't want to have is lack of confidence. And so sitting down and designing a plan and thinking through the money and thinking not only the current impact, but the long-term impact of our decisions is important. As an example, my wife, she gets to stay home with our four children, which is wonderful. I run a business and we love our home. We have an older home. It's in a good neighborhood. There's nothing wrong with it. But in our home, like most people, you say, well, maybe there's a few things we could have different. You know, we would like a bedroom that's like this, or bathroom that's like this. And been there 8 years and we're starting to get an itch. Maybe we should kind of upgrade now. We've been here a long time. It's home was built in 1979. But then we run the math and we say, you know, we've got four kids and one of them is only 5 years away from college. And so we decided we're going to stay there because when we reassess our values and recognize how important college is for them, our priority is making sure that we make decisions based on their college, not on what we might peripherally want, or maybe we don't even realize it, but subconsciously we could be even comparing to our peers, which happens all the time with Facebook and other social media platforms. So it's really, really important that we take inventory of our values. And when you sit down and kind of plan things out, you do consider your values, you consider expectations, spousal concerns. The biggest threat today is those without a plan. Sometimes it's the plan itself that does the work, but also times the conversations between spouses and making sure they're on the same page is the biggest benefactor of putting together a plan, because many, many spouses are getting divorced as we see the graying of our world. And many of them are getting divorced because they have misaligned expectations and they haven't sat down and done a plan.
Mm, that's very good advice. Thank you very much, Daryl. I was fascinated to read that you've also speak on preparing to retire before you expire.
Yeah. So first of all, I don't believe in retirement. I believe people should pivot. And what that means is that retirement by definition, one definition is the disposition of an asset over its useful life. And that would assume that your life's no longer useful. And I just can't buy that. Rather, I would want somebody to pivot into the next chapter to a life of purpose, where they can take their wisdom and take their time and hopefully some money and reach down to the next generation and pull them up. And that's really what it means to make that transition. So in all essence, retirement is just something I would discourage, but I want people to pivot into the next chapter. And so what I mean by before you expire, what I really am saying there is I want you to plan out, spend some time pivoting and thinking about what you want to do. As an example, one of the most critical elements of transitioning into the next chapter of life is making sure that your purpose is clear. And your purpose may change, but without a purpose, what people end up doing is they end up slowly dying. We know cardiac arrest goes up when people retire. We know depression can increase when people retire. And so the way to solve that, the antidote to that, is developing a purpose. And a purpose is usually rooted, there's a lot of different ways to find your purpose, but one of the best ways is to take inventory of your life. Everyone has a story. And in the climax of your story in which somebody helped you or somebody came along your side, or maybe somebody didn't, in that climax of your story is where you're going to find your purpose. And if you can take that, if you're bold enough to transition and to pivot into the next chapter of life with your purpose in hand, you'll wake up every day motivated. And that's what it makes. That's what retirement should be like.
Have you got some examples you care to share that you've seen?
Yeah, for sure. Well, we were dealing with a hurricane not long ago on our coast, and we're only a couple hours away from the coast, Corpus Christi in Houston, and there was massive storms. I mean, power outages and people without a home, and it was really bad. And you know, then you add the mosquitoes and the sickness, and it just became a place of desperation. And so, one of my clients who just recently pivoted has a hunger to serve. And so he took his time and he spent weeks and weeks and weeks down there just serving. And he's not one that's good with his hands, but having a heart, he just went down there and helped and moved boxes or moved furniture and just did what he could do. A person like that, who's going to give his time and frankly his money, they're going to live longer and they're going to be happier. And studies show that over and over again. And that's just one of many, many examples. There's so many people I know that are pivoting with purpose, and they're the happiest people I know. And those people that, you know, nothing wrong with golf, golf's great, but if it's all about golf, or maybe it's about Fox News, maybe it's about flower beds, they just are not happier. And it's the studies show that. And so people who have a purpose in the second chapter of their life, they're living a little differently.
Well, we all like to know how to live longer, that's for sure. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And live better, right? Like to be happier while you're living. I mean, we don't want to live longer and just be decaying, right? But we want to live longer and be thriving. And a part of that is purpose. And a part of that is community. You know, even when you give somebody a handshake, there's a chemical rush of oxytocin that occurs. And we need that kind of stuff in our life. So I think we underestimate the power of purpose when we pivot.
Right. Thank you. Now, I'd like to hear a bit about your latest book, Money and Retirement for All Ages, 18 to 80.
Yeah. So the book's titled 18 to 80, and it's everything you need to know about your money from age 18 to 80. And so every chapter is specifically to what you need to do. And so if somebody's 60 years old, they can open the book. They don't have to read it cover to cover. And they go to 60 and say, I need to be doing this. Now, you may want to look at 61 and 59, but you may want to also look at what your mother should be doing at age 80. Or you may want to look at what your child should be doing at age 30 or 25. And so what I wanted to do is create a book that was easy for people, mainly in the middle class, to digest just enough information to make adjustments in their lives, so that way they can start building their net worth in a way that makes sense, that's logical, and that's practical. And I really believe this book will help. The book is rooted in behavioral finance, but I don't really talk a lot about that. I spend a lot of time giving information based on the thousands and thousands of clients I've sat down kneecap to kneecap with over the last 20 years.
Right. And it's never too late to start, I suppose.
Well, no, it's absolutely not. I even think if you're 79, it's important to read this book, because believe it or not, I'm going to talk about why considering giving to your kids while you're living, given while you're living, may make sense or it may not make sense. Or I may talk about the biggest threat to your life in your 70s is con artists. And those con artists aren't always telemarketers. They're in your own family that can steal money from you. Mm. So it is not too late to make good, rational financial decisions. It's never too late. But somebody who's 18 years old, you got to grab the book and you got to start digesting it. And for those that are a little older, may have kids, this is a great book for a gift, because this is the book that you said, man, I wish I'd have known that when I was 18.
Because at 18, I suppose all we're interested in is having some money to buy a car.
That's right. Oh, you nailed it. I wrote this book not on what you should do, but what I think you're going to do. So my first chapter 18 is on pausing, adding the pause to all your purchases. So I just want you to get in the habit right away just to just pause before you purchase. But the second chapter, chapter 19, that's all about buying a car. Now, really, academically, I should probably talk to you about doing a budget, but it's a 19-year-old, right? You're thinking about a car. So I'm going to tell you about how to buy a car the right way. I'm not going to get too deep. I'm going to give you just enough nuggets for you not to make a foolish decision that you'll regret down the road that I've done before. I remember when I was younger, I bought this ridiculously expensive BMW that I couldn't afford, and it took me forever to pay that thing off. I actually ended up having to sell it. I couldn't afford it, and I just don't want other people to make some of those same mistakes. So yes, I do get a little vulnerable in there because I've made some dumb mistakes and paid some stupid taxes. But But this is a book that you will, as an 18, 19 year old, you will be able to digest quickly and apply quickly.
Yeah. And as we age, like we end up being involved with helping our aging parents. So that can impact us as well.
Oh my gosh. I do talk about the sandwich generation. You know, 29% of kids now are moving back in with their parents. And there's a big generation, a large generation that's taking care of their kids and their parents. And the stress that puts on them, it's very real. And so I talk about a few things, because one of the biggest challenges is when you're taking care of aging parents is, how do you get along with your siblings? Like, who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to take care of mom and dad? And if I'm doing all the work, well, am I going to get paid for this? Or you're going to get mad at me for making these decisions? There's just so much there. So I spent a chapter just unpacking that. Very, very important. One of the biggest issues that crosses my desk today.
Is it? That's interesting.
Oh yeah, by far. You know, I had somebody the other day ask me about that. What's the biggest issue? And it is clearly taking care of aging parents and the boomerang of bedrooms, the children coming back in at the same time. Oh, it's clearly by far.
Well, I'm pleased my children have got themselves both set up and on their career path. So I'm happy to say they won't be back.
Oh, that's a blessing. It's a blessing. Yeah, it's not the case for a lot of people. You know, I don't know what the percentage is. Well, I mean, 29% are moving back, but there's a lot to unpack there. But it is an issue that we're seeing more and more and more of. And I don't know why, but it's happening and we just have to address it. And we have to figure out ways, because if we spend all our money on our kids, it's impacting the dreams that we have. And so we just have to think about that and not enable our children, but empower them and give them the opportunities to get off their feet. But that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's been really interesting what you have shared today, and I'd love to have you back at another time. So I gather you get up to other things in your community. Would you like to share what you're doing in your spare time?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I spent a lot of time in the city of San Antonio helping redevelop part of the city. I just got into leadership role real early. The mayor named a park after me, which is just kind of crazy to know that there's a Daryl W. Lyons Park in San Antonio. I spent some time on several boards, but one of the boards I'm proud of right now is I help get kids off the streets onto the basketball court in a country by the name of Moldova. It's near Russia and Romania. It's a very small, young country, but there's a lot of needs there. So helping kids get off the streets on the basketball court gives them hope. And that ministry is called the Admirals, and a guy named David Robinson here in San Antonio helped establish it. So I helped manage that board. But I'm hungry to just play a role, and I want to see how much God has in me. So I just keep going. My priority, though, above all my nonprofit work and the stuff I do in the community, is the four kids at home. So I spend a lot of time coaching them, hanging out with them, telling them bedtime stories, reading to them, praying for them, all the stuff a dad should be doing. That's my number one goal.
Well, that's admirable. And yes, we can all do something in our community and in other communities. And it's commendable that you are doing that as well. So to finish up then, we'll just do a quick summary of what we've been talking about.
Sure. Yeah, just in summary, I think that what we're dealing with today and in the future for the middle class is a real challenge. And the fact that there's these mischievous marketers out there, and you know who you are, and I know you're doing a good job, but you've got us. You have figured out how to sell us, and we don't even know it. And so in the middle class, in order for us to free up the cash flow for us to give and save and pay down debt, we have to be smarter. And we have to use our head, our prefrontal cortex, and we have to start adding a degree of pause in all of our spending and start thinking about the way we spend our money. Because the reality is that we're all aging and we have to pay down debt. We have to save. There's no doubt. And if we can start creating this pause in our life, we will end up winning with money. We will end up building our net worth. You can become a millionaire if you can get this discipline in place. It just starts now.
All right. Well, thanks very much. It's all about providing for ourselves in the future, because I'm certain I wouldn't be able to survive on the government pension.
No, you just can't. You can't do it alone. You got to save. It's scary and it doesn't feel right, but it is the right thing to do.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Our listeners today, we've been privileged to have Daryl Lyons on our show, and maybe he'll be kind enough to come back another time.
Thanks, Ann. This was fun. You asked great questions. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Daryl can be contacted at daryl@paxfg.com or visit the website paxfinancialgroup.com.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.